This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
thousands of people in South Africa's Western Cape have been evacuated following a vicious storm that hit the city of Cape Town and then barreled down the coast, starting wildfires that have decimated large parts of the coastal tourist town of Knysna.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting. Details next.
Also, 50 people were killed yesterday when Al-Shabaab militants attacked a military base in the Puntland region, and at least 14 people are dead and 24 wounded after Boko Haram militants attacked Maiduguri, the capital of Nigeria's Borno state.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, thousands of people in South Africa's Western Cape have been evacuated following a vicious storm that hit the city of Cape Town and then barreled down the coast, starting wildfires that have decimated large parts of the coastal tourist town of Knysna. Officials say 8 people have died in the storm. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to one family that lost everything in the fires.
Wayne Button had a frantic night Wednesday as he watched the worst storm in 3 decades batter the city of Cape Town, South Africa. Meanwhile, 500 kilometers down the coast, his family in the seaside town of Knysna were fleeing for their lives as storm winds whipped up wildfires that destroyed their home. Button, a 49-year-old builder, spoke to VOA from Cape Town, where he works, as he made his way to his Knysna home to find his family and assess the damage. His family of 4 among the estimated 10,000 people who have been evacuated in the storm's wake.
I've lost everything. I mean, when I say I've lost everything, my kids were lucky to get out because the fire actually caught them at the house. All our cash was in the house, all our clothing, and I'm talking everything. So financially, we are in a terrible situation, and we just got to work through it. So I think what I've got to do is just clear my head and say, right, where do we concentrate? So for me right now, it's to get the kids and my wife to somewhere where, at least for a couple of nights, they've got somewhere with a roof over their head.
Forecaster Dupuy Tawana of the South African Weather Service says extreme weather does happen from time to time during the South African winter. She says forecasters were taken aback by the extent of the winds and high seas that this recent cold front created.
It does happen. The extreme weather do happen. Not frequent, but they do happen. I think it's one of those systems that we usually experience in our winters. It's one of the intense systems that we ever experience, more in terms of the strong winds and the high seas. The rain was there, but it wasn't that much. We had heavy rainfall in places, but it was not as intense as we anticipated. But what we had was very strong winds that caused a lot of damages, and we had high seas as well.
In coming days, Tawana says the temperature is expected to drop in inland South Africa, and high winds in the interior are expected to pose a threat of runaway fires. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
At least 50 people were killed yesterday, including 3 senior military officers, when Al-Shabaab militants attacked a military base in the Puntland region. Military officials and witnesses told VOA the dead include at least 45 Puntland soldiers and 5 Al-Shabaab militants. However, the Puntland security minister disputes reports of heavy military losses. He says most of the casualties were civilians. Witnesses say the assault started with a heavy gun battle that lasted for more than 2 hours in the Bare region. Puntland is a relatively stable region compared to the southern and central parts of Somalia, but the region's regional forces have not been able to completely take control of the Galgal Mountains from Al-Shabaab.
At least 14 people are dead and 24 wounded after Boko Haram militants attacked Maiduguri, the capital of Nigeria's Borno state, last night. The dead include four attackers. It's the biggest attack against Maiduguri in many months. Most of the recent attacks have been suicide bomb attempts, often carried out by teenage girls. The Associated Press says the assault began after evening prayers and targeted four locations in the city. But divisionary attacks were also launched in the Maiduguri suburbs to draw soldiers away from the capital.
The wounds of the Nigerian Civil War, triggered by the attempted secession of the Biafra region in 1967, still have not healed. More than 1 million Biafran civilians died in the war, many from starvation as the government imposed a blockade. Despite the outcome of the war, there have been renewed efforts for Biafra to secede from Nigeria, and that has led to growing tensions in some parts of the country against the Igbo people, the majority of the Biafra population, but who also live in other parts of Nigeria. In Kaduna State, for example, a coalition of youth groups is demanding that the Igbo people leave northern Nigeria within 3 months. This is raising concerns about possible violence. Reporter Chika Odua is following the story from Sokoto State in northwest Nigeria. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapoor.
The Igbos originate from southeastern Nigeria, and for the past 50 years, they have been asking for a new country. They want to break away from Nigeria and form a new country called Biafra. And this agitation started in 1967, so exactly 50 years ago. And they were saying that they feel marginalized as a people. They believe because they are largely Christians, whereas many northern Nigerians, it's mostly Muslim. So they say that they feel discriminated. So 1967, they seceded and broke away to form Biafra. Of course, that led to a civil war, 3 years, and Biafra surrendered and rejoined Nigeria. But now those agitations are back, and they're louder than ever. So they've been calling this year for another breakaway, you know, either to break away, have a referendum, and that referendum has been tagged Biafra exit in the likeness of the British exit from the UK, Brexit. And many Igbo people are spread across Nigeria because they kind of control the trade sector. They're tradesmen, businessmen. They're all around Nigeria, millions of Igbo people. So the northerners are reacting to this news of Biafra, the intention to break away, and they're saying, fine, if you don't want to be part of Nigeria, leave. Leave in 3 months. So that's what's happening.
So tell me about these youth groups, these northern youth groups, who have issued what's been called the Kaduna Declaration.
Well, this is one of the many youth groups in northern Nigeria operating as a civic group just to express the sentiment of the area where they're finding themselves. And so they have declared that the Igbo people should leave northern Nigeria, not just Kaduna, but northern Nigeria in the next 3 months. They did not state that there will be any violence, but in the past, there has been a lot of violence against the Igbo people in the north. In 1966, more than 30,000 Igbo people were killed in northern Nigeria. It gets very deadly. So people are fearing that something like this would happen again. So they're making this declaration saying Igbo should leave, and many Igbo people are in the north with businesses. They have a lot of investments. Igbo people are known to be very entrepreneurial people, so they have hotels and hospitals and restaurants.
Now, has there been any statement from any Igbo organization saying we do not go along with efforts to secede from Nigeria?
Well, yes. You know, Igbo groups have responded to this in shock. Many people are worried, again, that this is very reminiscent of what led to the 1967 civil war, where 30,000 Igbo people were killed in northern Nigeria. The people are thinking, you know, what is happening? So they're coming out, different Igbo groups, to say this is not right. We don't have to resort to violence.
Has there been any reaction from the government on this?
Yes, one of the states, of course, northern Nigeria, there are 19 states, and one of those state governors has said this is wrong. We cannot do this, and he's actually calling for the arrest of the northern youth. He's going to get a lot of commendation, this governor, from Igbo people, because it seems as if he's, you know, saying, look, you know, I have your back, this is wrong. And in Nigeria, religious politics is very sensitive. So this is a northern governor who was Muslim saying, you don't have to do this. And of course, Igbos, as I mentioned, they're largely Christian. this statement that he's made is quite interesting because he's crossing over religious lines, ethnic lines, to say, you know what, we are going to take care of you. This is not right. We're going to arrest those youth.
Now, I know you've been covering the revived Biafra movement. What is the latest that you've learned about that?
It's a very strong movement, and they're very, very sure that they want to leave. How to leave, that's the question. Some people are saying it should be violent, a violent breakaway. But other people want a more diplomatic measure. They're looking for a referendum in Nigeria and also at the United Nations. So this is a movement with a lot of young energy. Many young people are asking for this, but a lot of those young people were not alive during the war. So a lot of elderly people, Igbo people, they're saying, you know what, no, let's remain in Nigeria. We don't want to have another war. We lived through it. We suffered through it. We don't want that again. But young Igbo people, many have romanticized the idea of Biafra. They don't know what war was like, so they want maybe not war, but they're saying we have to get it no matter what it takes.
That's reporter Chika Oduwa from Sokoto State in northwest Nigeria. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapua.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 16 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Thousands of people in South Africa's Western Cape have been evacuated following a vicious storm that hit the city of Cape Town. 50 people were killed yesterday when Al-Shabaab militants attacked a military base in the Puntland region. And at least 14 people are dead and 24 wounded after Boko Haram militants attacked Maiduguri, the capital of Nigeria's Borno State. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Germany's foreign minister made an unannounced visit to Libya today, where he pledged nearly $4 million to help migrants and refugees within the country. Sigmar Gabriel says Germany is committed to Libya's government of national accord, but called on all parties to unite and end the fighting and political turmoil.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Rad Al Hussein, has accused Burundi of ongoing human rights violations. He made the allegations during the 35th Human Rights Council session. Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The United Nations Human Rights Chief released a statement that said, "Denial of access and lack of cooperation with the United Nations bodies will not diminish scrutiny of a state's human rights record." Last year, Burundi's government suspended all forms of cooperation with the United Nations Human Rights Office, and the Human Rights Council's independent commission was declared persona non grata and barred from entering the country. Jean-Baptiste Baribonekeza is the chairman of Burundi's independent National Human Rights Commission.
A number of people who get killed in a way to be termed as a human rights violation has decreased, I think, to 1% or so. So basically, we cannot say that the kind of serious human rights violations that are being committed today, although, of course, we are trying to be realistic also. We don't expect a zero-incident situation, but we cannot say that the situation is escalating.
He says human rights violations are still being recorded in some parts of the country, and that about 10 people have been killed after being kidnapped since January this year.
The most worrying trend is cases of people who get abducted or disappeared, especially close to the border with the Congo. We have cases of people get disappeared in Gatumba or Kajaga, etc., and also some sporadic attacks across the border.
The Burundi government says it has been working hard to improve the human rights situation in the country, and that the United Nations Human Rights Council was misinformed about the current situation. Martin Nivyavandi is the Minister of Human Rights in Burundi.
There are some cases of human rights violation. Even Burundi is the same. Burundi is not a paradise. We don't deny that there are some cases of human rights violation, but telling to the people that the situation is worse, it is not that. That to misinform the opinion. We want to know exactly what's the agenda of the responsible the Human Rights Commission in Geneva.
The United Nations has condemned the Burundi ruling party's youth wing in Imbonerakure of the campaign of fear and terror against the opposition members. Relations between the European Union and Burundi have continued to deteriorate after the European Union suspended direct aid to the government after reports of human rights violations. Burundi officials say they obtained a leaked document that showed the European Union financially supporting some activists in 2014 in what they said was an effort to overthrow Nkurunziza's government. The European Union rejected the accusation but says support of human rights defenders is a top priority policy. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
In Zimbabwe's struggling economy, there are fewer people able to support the arts. As a result, artists are selling their creations elsewhere. Reporter Kuzayi Zvenevashi has the story.
As American singer and songwriter Bob Dylan once put it, what is art next to life? Such is the case of economically hard-pressed Zimbabweans who often see art as a luxury. The situation has severely affected the country's visual arts. Masi Mushore is a gallerist in Harare. She explains how the economy is impacting visual arts.
I think things are quite depressed. I think one of the things that we all know is that art is a luxury. It's not a necessity. I think a lot of people are struggling to acquire art. Locally, there is still not enough disposable income for local people to acquire art.
As a result, the country's best works of art find markets outside Zimbabwe, entirely robbing the country of its art heritage. Marcus Gora is a director of First Floor Gallery in Harare, which largely works with emerging artists. He says there is more to the issue than the poor state of the economy.
Economic situation means that there is not enough support, either from the corporate sector or from individuals, to support a visual art economy. Artists here don't have a sustainable ready market to buy their artworks. So this is not only because the economy is bad. Other factors are the fact that there still is a need to broaden the collector base in the country, cultivate a new breed of collectors and bring in more audiences. So there's need for audience engagement and collector development.
Gora says, in the colonial era, visual art was seen as elite. A few wealthy people would go to galleries to buy art. He says that's a notion that needs to change since there are now galleries with reasonably priced artworks and admission to galleries ranges free to $1. Rafael Chikukwa is deputy director and chief curator at the National Art Gallery, which is a government parastatal. He explains the long-term plan to change the narrative for art.
You know, the visual literacy is very low. The understanding of what art is all about is very low. We need to grow that. So I would like to say thanks to the new curriculum and thanks to the Minister of Primary and Secondary Education, who forcefully, with resistance from people, to introduce art as a subject. Compulsory from preschool to secondary education. And us as National Gallery, we support it. And for me, personally, as a curator, I think it's a very good thing because when I grew up, when I was doing art, I was an example of not what to be in life for many parents. So this will come to pass when we train people from preschool to secondary.
Chikukwa says, until then, Zimbabwe is losing out.
Most of these artists, their work, which is supposed to remain in the country, is being bought by foreigners. So there's a need for African institutions, museums, corporate world, and individuals with money to buy these works so that they remain here for the next generation to enjoy.
Zimbabwe is not only losing its works of art, but artists as well. Many have relocated to other countries with vibrant visual art sectors. The National Art Gallery does have a robust permanent collection, which continues to buy some works of local artists in a bid to preserve the art heritage of this time for the future. The new curriculum will help groom a new generation of artists. Gora says, to grow an audience, local mainstream media needs to give more coverage to the visual arts, just as they do with other forms of art such as theatre and music. Some say, everyone becomes an artist when they shape letters as they learn to write or by moulding objects out of clay. For VOA, this is Kudza Izunawashe from Harare.
A United Nations watchdog committee finds the United States is in violation of treaty obligations aimed at protecting children in armed conflict and preventing the sale and trafficking of children. The Committee on the Rights of the Child, which monitors implementation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, has just completed a three-week examination of the United States and seven other countries. Lisa Schlein has the story from Geneva.
The United States is the only country in the world that is not party to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, but it has ratified two optional protocols to the Convention on the Involvement of Children in Armed Conflict and the Sale of Children, Child Prostitution, and Child Pornography. Both protocols were reviewed at this session. Under the Protocol on Children in Armed Conflict, the committee expressed concern about the deaths of children killed by U.S. airstrikes in countries such as Yemen, Syria, and Afghanistan. Human rights expert Benyam Dawid Mizmore says the committee is troubled by full or partial presidential waivers that enable the U.S. to provide military training and assistance to armed forces in countries where the recruitment and use of children as soldiers is practiced. He tells VOA the U.S. argues it needs to provide military aid to such countries as Yemen, Afghanistan, and South Sudan to professionalize their armed forces.
The conflict that is going on in South Sudan has a child as its face. It's been extremely devastating for children. Now, to talk about partial or full waiver for the government of South Sudan to be able to have access to military equipment and commercial sale access from the government of the United States of America, we don't believe that will actually help to professionalize the armed forces. We don't believe that it will help in the implementation of the optional protocol in South Sudan.
The Committee of Experts commends the United States for the progress being made in the fight against the trafficking and exploitation of children. But it says the U.S. falls short in preventing abuse in areas such as the sale of children for work purposes, organ trafficking, adoption, or the use of children in pornography. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Justin Thwaites, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondence reports around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of the Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.